Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
His name is Stan Gordon. He's from Pennsylvania. And thanks to David Twitchell, I was told to get a hold of this fella. And I sent him an email, and Stan replied that he'd be glad to come on the show. What caught my interest was his connection with UFOs, Sasquatch, and also on his site, I was looking at the Thunderbirds. So I'd like to talk about that as well, because I've been hearing more about that. But welcome to the show, Stan Gordon. How you doing?
We're doing fine. Thank you for having me on today.
Oh, it's great. Tell me a little bit about your background. I was reading that back in the 60s is kind of when you started to get... you grew up in Pennsylvania your whole life, right?
That's correct. I actually started in this when I was 10 years old back in 1959. And so it's approaching 53 years now that I've been investigating, researching phenomena here in Pennsylvania. And I can tell you, of all the years I've been doing this and the thousands of people I've interviewed and the evidence I've seen out in the field, I've never personally seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself.
You've never seen it?
I have never seen one.
Anybody close to you have those kind of interactions?
No, I've talked to a lot of people and people I know who have had experiences, but I haven't had one myself.
Would you wish you had one at all, Stan?
Well, I guess it kind of keeps me still skeptical, even though I'm quite convinced that there's phenomena out there we don't have explanations for. But so far, I guess I haven't been in the right time, the right place.
So maybe you should come up here, because there's a lot of people, most people that I know, well, I don't know if that, maybe that's a broad statement, but a lot of people might know, including myself, have seen some really strange things in Upper Michigan. But we're real remote. Is it remote where you're at? Because you're not too far from a major city, are you?
Well, I'm about 30-some miles from Pittsburgh, which is the largest city I'm closest to. But out in this area, I mean, we're in a there's a lot of woods, a lot of forests, a lot of mountains out in this general area. And Pennsylvania has a lot of places where a lot of strange things can occur, and they do. Especially up in Fayette County, along what they call the Chestnut Ridge, which is a 100-mile-long mountain range. It runs from Preston County, West Virginia, to Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County. And that mountain range has a long, long history of strange and unusual happenings. I mean, year after year, we get reports of Bigfoot sightings and UFOs and other strange events along different aspects of the Chestnut Ridge.
So what is it that really interests you in this? Because, you know, everybody's got to have a reason, right? That really creates a passion. What is your passion for all this, Stan?
Well, how I got involved, interestingly, was on my 10th birthday, which was around the Halloween season back in 1959, and my parents gave me a new AM radio, and I'm listening on the AM band that night, and because of Halloween, there was radio shows talking about strange, unusual happenings. And I was very curious when I was young, and I was wondering if these stories are true or people are making these things up. So I began to make frequent trips to the local library, began to read all the books they had on the subject, and cut articles out of local papers. And I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, about 12 miles from my home. That was a case that now has received a lot of international interest.
Yeah,
I've been working on the case ever since it happened.
We're going to talk about that in a moment as well, but to have something like that, that's right in your backyard, right? That was real close.
Yeah, it was about 12 miles away, and so that was the case that started me on my kind of lifetime pursuit to look into these reports. I began to go out into the field after that event happened. And just to give a little more background, in 1969, I decided to set up a public hotline for people to report UFO reports, and I began to make contact with the local police and the news media about what I was going to do. And as word got out about my hotline over weeks and months, I was just being inundated with calls and realized that this was a lot more than I could handle on my own, because people were calling in not just about UFOs, but anything strange and unusual, from hauntings to strange creature encounters to all kind of mysterious events. And I realized that I needed scientists, engineers, research people who could go out to investigate, to evaluate what was going on. So that's what I decided to do, set up a quick response type research group to respond to these type of cases. So with my electronics background, I set up a elaborate communication center in my home. devised a two-way radio dispatch system so we could radio dispatch some of the investigators out to different areas. And that was the first group formed was in 1970 called the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group.
Hmm.
And by 1975, the group was so well-known across the state of Pennsylvania that we changed the name of the group to the Pennsylvania Center for UFO Research. And in 1981, I founded another group called the Pennsylvania Association for the Study of the Unexplained to serve as a statewide clearinghouse for reports of unusual phenomena. And that group continued until 1993, and since that time, I've been continuing to investigate as an independent researcher.
Wow. You really have started a lot in your own state and got things moving. And, you know, now with, I think, the help of some of the different programs that have been on TV, I think people, you know, certainly there's some that are not maybe in it for the genuine reason, but there are more and more people that seem to be taking an interest in ghost hunting and UFO exploration and Sasquatch. I know some of those shows are kind of far-fetched, but at least people are opening up their mind. Years ago, you may have been laughed at. Or how did they treat you when you first started talking about this stuff, Stan?
You know, I guess I was kind of lucky, or maybe it was the way I handled this. I mean, I started talking about this when I was in high school, and I started giving public lectures in the late 1960s. And I kept these cases, investigations. I did it very open-mindedly, very skeptically, and I guess I earned a reputation with the media and the police and around this area that I was out there trying to find answers to what was really going on. And in fact, I always found, and I still do today, that many of the reports came in, while initially strange and unusual, most when you investigate are determined to be either natural or man-made in origin. However, year after year, events happen you cannot easily dismiss. And but actually, I've had very little what I would call ridicule to myself. Actually, myself and my group has had very, very good support from the media over the years in this area in Pennsylvania. And that's the way we've tried to handle it. And, I continue to do this the best I can. I'm going to be doing this now approaching 53 years.
Wow.
So I'm still out there, even though I don't have the energy and time as much as I did before, back in younger days, but we're still very active.
So what happens if you ever see one, like a UFO?
Well, if I do, I'll let you know, and then we'll both know how I react.
You think you'd be afraid of that if you saw something like that?
I don't really think so. I mean, you know, there's so many reports or high-altitude reports, but I've investigated probably hundreds of extremely detailed, very low-level, close-range reports. And, I mean, we've looked into, you know, UFO car chases, UFO landings, and occupant cases, and just so many, many cases over the years were just incredible reports.
Have you dealt with abductions at all? People being abducted, have they talked to you about that, Stan?
Actually, I was probably one of the first researchers that really got involved in that back in the 1960s. And, over the years interviewed, you know, a number of people in the greater Pittsburgh area and other areas who claim to have had some type of interaction with what they believe to be extraterrestrials and being taken aboard the craft and examined. In recent years, hardly ever hear about it at all. It's just like it hardly happens anymore around here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in past years, it was quite a bit of activity from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, early 90s. But, and I talked to some very credible people. I mean, I remember talking to, people in law and a minister and police officers and people from all backgrounds and even sometimes generations of families that claim to have had these experiences. And I would say that some of these appear to be very, very interesting, detailed cases. Something was happening that was affecting the lives of a lot of these people. But can I positively say that they are being abducted by extraterrestrials? I cannot. But something was going on there that really required a lot of interest and scientific study. And, you know, we did the best we could, but we are overloaded with reports and with no funding and doing on your spare time. There's only so much you can do in these cases.
You know what? I liked what you just said. Actually, what I liked what you didn't say. You didn't say that this is not, that you could explain it away. We, you know, people that claim to be abducted, myself having an experience, not abduction, but an experience, you didn't say, well, it's this. We know it's this. How can you say one way or the other? You know? How can people say, well, it's this kind of sleep paralysis? We really don't know, do we, Stan?
Well, we don't. And, I mean, some of the cases we saw were just, and this is going back many, many years. I'll tell you just right off the top of my head, something that always kind of was of interest to me. One of the first cases some of my other investigators looked at was actually a case they looked at which had occurred in the late 1960s in Pennsylvania, but almost to the Ohio line. And just from the top of my head, what I recall was that there was some type of an event in a rural area where a gentleman reportedly was taken aboard a craft and given various type of experimental events were taking place. And he mentioned that there were these small creatures involved. And how he described it, and this was back many years ago, he said, they looked like Pillsbury Doughboys.
Really?
And that always stuck with me because it wasn't until years later that we heard about the term the Grays.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very similar to what he was talking about so many years before.
Except when you touched them in the stomach, they didn't go, woohoo! I don't think that happened, right?
I guess not.
So let's talk about the Kecksburg incident. It took place right in your backyard, 1965, right?
That's correct, December 9th.
So what happened?
Well, we could talk actually for days about Kecksburg, but just a brief scenario. Late afternoon, about 4:47 p.m., over a wide distance, from reports came in from the tip of Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, of this bright, fiery object moving across the sky. I was tuning in, coincidentally, that night to KDK Radio in Pittsburgh, because they had a well-known talk show. It was called Contact, and the host of the show was a late Mike Levine. And the reason I turned into the program that night, he had a guest on, it was Frank Edwards, who had written some books on strange occurrences. So I was tuning in to listen to Frank Edwards and found out that basically the entire program was focusing on the series of reports from people calling in about seeing this fiery object moving across the Pittsburgh skies, you know, just a short time before. And as things continued that evening, reports got much more fascinating. They were reading news wire story reports. They were interviewing witnesses. And reports were coming in that whatever the object was, it apparently fell about 40 miles southeast of Pittsburgh in a rural community near Kecksburg in Westmoreland County. And, of course, that wasn't far from me. I still wasn't even driving yet. I was 16. And, of course, listening to what was going on, remember running back and forth from room to room, looking at the old black and white console TV and see if anything was on there. And they were actually breaking in on KKTV with live reports about a UFO having fallen near Kecksburg and that the military was now arriving in the area to search for the object. And it was a fascinating evening. I couldn't wait till the next day to see if there'd be any articles in the local paper, and it was the headline in all the local papers. It was making the national news. AP and UPI and wire services had picked up the story. And there was some interesting stories in the local paper. They had two editions. The first edition headlined, Army Ropes Off Area, Unidentified Flying Object Falls Near Kecksburg. Later edition had a number of stories, including searches failed to find object. And basically what the story went on to say was that there was indeed a search. They had looked into the woods. Nothing had been found. And people had apparently been mistaken. From the official explanation was they had seen a bright meteor in the sky and nothing had fallen.
Mm.
Well, there was very little information initially. I began to make a few phone calls, try to make contact with a few people out there. There was very few people's names out there who were involved and couldn't get much information that time. But over a period of weeks and months and years, I began to get calls from people who were involved, from neighbors and friends or relatives, and many times anonymous tips from people who said, well, I know this person was involved, and we'd follow up and talk to these people. But so many people never came forward, probably because of the fact that people knew what they experienced, but after hearing the official explanation next day, they all kept their mouths shut.
You think anybody was told to keep their mouths shut?
Well, there's a lot to this story. And was there an indication of a cover-up? There definitely was, regardless of what the object was. But anyhow, just to go back a little bit and give you a little more detail, over the years, we found out that shortly after the object fell, various people independently went down to the wooded ravine and came across this large, metallic, acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground.
Hmm.
One witness was a few feet away from him. He was part of a volunteer fire department search team that came in because firemen were being called out because there was reports of a possible downed aircraft in the area, and they came across a semi-buried object. This fellow had been a machinist most of his life, and he said the best way to describe what he saw, he said it looked like somebody took liquid metal and poured it into an acorn-shaped mold of an unusual off-gold color. He said estimated it was probably, from what he could tell, about 10 to 12 feet or more in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. It was one solid piece of metal, no rivets, no seams, no fuselage, no weld marks. But on the raised up back of the object, what he called the bumper, which be the backup part of the acorn, raised up on that surface were unusual markings that he said were more like symbols than letters.
Hmm.
And because of his background, he was somewhat familiar with Cyrillic, Russian writing, and he said that's not what it was. And interestingly, as he's there with several of these other firemen from other departments he didn't know, two men in trench coats come down, very stern, and they had what looked like a little yellow civil defense Geiger counter, and they told them, this area is now quarantined, you got to get out of here immediately, and right behind them are soldiers coming down through the woods.
Mm.
He said they were so close to each other, they shined their flashlights on each other. And so there was various people we interviewed over the years, independently of each other, didn't even know each other, who apparently got down to see this object, and were able to take us to the exact location in the woods independently over a period of time.
So what is your... You've had a lot of people talk to you about this. A lot of people have told similar facts in it. What is your best estimation? Is this something that's man-made, or do you think it's not?
Well, like I said, there's a lot to this story, and we could talk for, like I said, for days just about this. And you got to remember, this is the early days of the space program.
Right.
Whatever this thing was, before it came down in Keksberg, it was moving relatively slowly. It was making change in direction along its path. And those who saw it descend say it did not come down at a high rate of speed, but it came down almost like it made a controlled landing. And moments later, there was a column of kind of bluish-gray smoke went up and then soon disappeared. It was relatively large for back in those days. There were no parachutes involved. Nobody ever reported seeing a parachute out there because much of what was being built by different countries came down and re-entered and
right.
landed with parachutes. But... yeah, I've had many people come to me over the years who said, I know positively what this thing was, I got information on it, and they're all kind of serious. It ranged from anywhere from a Soviet satellite to a Soviet ICBM to a missile to one fellow said he was certain it was some kind of projectile fired from a giant gun on a railroad car in Canada. And, of course, there's many other theories. More recent years, people are contacting me about the theory that this was some kind of a Nazi secret device, the bell.
Mm.
Others have contacted me about other various... Not everybody can be right. And a lot of the details we have don't really place any of those right in perspective as what we know, even though there's some similarities. And be honest with you, I keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
We've eliminated a lot of the
Is theory. Is it a Russian craft? Could it be?
Well, that had been a theory for years, that this could be somehow associated with what they call Cosmos 96, which was a Soviet Venus probe that re-entered the Earth's atmosphere coincidentally the same morning about 3:18 a.m. in Canada. This happened about 4:47 in the afternoon. And for years, there was always some theory that, well, maybe somehow... Cosmos 96 is related to this event. Well, there's been a lot of information in more recent years that has come out, which pretty much eliminates Cosmos 96.
Mm.
And, the Cosmos 96, the probe itself, was only 3 feet in diameter. This thing was big enough for a human to stand inside of. And there's a lot of things with the case that have unanswered. We have a lot of unanswered questions that deal with the case. We have a lot of information on it. We do know that early that morning, around 1 o'clock in the morning, that thing apparently left on the back of a large military flatbed tractor trailer. And what we were told and what I learned from various people, including a gentleman who approached me in the summer of 1990 before we did the season premiere for the Unsolved Mystery Show on that case. And he told me he was a part of the Air Force security team that guarded that object, that they were made aware that object was coming into Lockbourne Air Force Base outside of Columbus, Ohio. And he told me, and another person verified this, unknown to him, that they brought in for a different way that they normally access that base. It was backed into a hangar. They were they put up a very high security perimeter around that area. In fact, they were given a shoot-to-kill order to anybody approach that hangar without proper authorization. And he wasn't on the team much longer, but he heard that it didn't stay on the base that long, that it continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and other people came to us and verified and went to Wright-Patterson. We even know what building it went to, but where it's at today, we have no idea.
So whatever it was, it is something that the military did not want the public to know about.
Exactly.
And it could be either something that we were experimenting with, something a foreign country, or perhaps something from outside of another planet or another dimension that
was
here.
That's correct.
So probably one of those three things, right?
That is correct. And like I said, there's so much more we haven't even talked about. I mean, just...
Let me ask you this, Stan.
Yes.
You've studied UFO reports. Have you heard a lot about Bell UFOs? Because that's something you do not hear about. Bell-shaped.
That is correct. You do, on occasion, hear these reports. They are not very, very common in regard to the other variety of different shapes we hear about, from, you know, the disc, the rectangle, the triangle, the cigar shape, and many other various shapes as well. But we do get such reports.
Do you still get them recently? Do you still get them within the last number of years?
I can't say. I personally have that I can think of. I've heard reports from other states and other countries. And I can't think of any significant right off the top of my head. I get so many reports in here, it's hard to keep track of everything. But you do get them on occasion, but not that often.
Because, you know, if it was a government design, you know, I look at those, what was it, like the early UFO reports back in the 50s and 60s? They were like egg-shaped. You know,
yeah.
You don't hear about those anymore. Those egg-shaped craft. There was a good one out in New Mexico. Wasn't it like a deputy saw?
Yeah, in Socorro.
And so you don't hear about them, and you just wonder either the technology has advanced, or for being visited by a certain race, maybe they just don't come here anymore because they don't like us. Or they
well,
don't.
There have been some kind of egg-shaped reports in more recent years. Not that common, though, but they do exist.
Okay. So there's a lot of theories on this story, and I guess we'll probably never really find out, will we, Stan?
We may never know, and we're hopefully, you know, I still do get some leads on the case, but nothing in recent time that's going to solve the mystery. There was so much we've learned about people who were on the scene that night, because hundreds of people, after hearing the radio reports on the news, descended on that small farming community, including reporters who were there and saw the military presence. And we have reports from civilians who told us that they tried to get down into the woods and they were stopped by armed military personnel, to the effect that some of them had weapons aimed at them,
mm-hmm.
which prevented them from going down on people's private property.
And you also will hear stories, and maybe not with this one, but people that were witnesses years later will say the reason they didn't speak up is because they were told if they did, something grave may happen to them. Do you ever run into that, Stan?
In that case, I mean, I've heard something along that line. There have been indications. Well, I can give you one example. John Murphy was the WHJB news director of the local radio station that was being inundated with reports that night. He was, as far as we know, the first reporter on the scene. And there's a lot of things we learned that apparently he was able to get down into the woods before most of the authorities arrived and reportedly took photographs of this object, which several people saw later on, black and white pictures. And verified to us by various personnel from the radio station. I mean, John, this was probably the biggest story he ever had. He was deeply involved in this investigation. He was putting together a special radio program that was called Object in the Woods, that was broadcast about a week later in a censored fashion, which, in fact, on my documentary I did on this case called Kecksburg, The Untold Story, which is available on DVD now, which people can look at it at my website, stangordon.info, but I have some of the actual censored radio broadcast on that presentation. But anyhow, what we verified to us was the fact that while he was doing this investigation, apparently some government men came into the station, talked to him privately, and I guess when he came out, he was a lot different personality than normally had been. He pretty much told them that these men confiscated some of the voice interviews he did with witnesses, and soon after, he pretty much didn't even want to talk about the case anymore, and all his materials disappeared from around the house and everywhere else, and he just kept quiet about it.
No kidding. So something happened. You know something had to happen, right?
Well, yeah, and to others as well, yes.
So, moving on, as far as, like, you and I, when we were talking before we did the interview, part of what caught my interest, by the way, his site is stangordon.info, and it has many different investigations, not just UFOs, but it looks like all kinds of different reports. But you seem to find that there's seems to be some kind of connection with reports of UFOs and with Bigfoot. And this, you know, and part of it, you were telling me that when there's been a lot of UFO sightings, there's been Bigfoot sightings. And you even said something about, because I've talked to another gal up here, Lisa Scheel, and she's done some research on that as well. So there's a few people out there that seem to be making this connection. Now, I want to tell you this, Stan, before we get to this. There's a fella who I haven't been able to talk to. He said he was going to talk to me, but I don't want to push people. You know, I'm sure you're probably like this. When they say they might talk to you and then you try to reach them and they avoid you, I leave it at that. I don't keep going after them. But it's somebody I know. I know somebody really well, and they're related to this person. This person would go out hunting, not far from where I live, actually. It's about 5 miles. And I live out in the country, and he would go out to this area, and he would see these lights and this hairy-type creature, these strange lights, and he would not make a big deal out of it. But others that went with him to go hunting didn't want to stay with him because they were afraid, and they'd take off, and they never wanted to go back with him. But he would rather hunt, so he leaves this thing alone, and it leaves him alone. So to me, you know, it's a potential for, what is it? Could it be some kind of connection with Sasquatch? And what is Sasquatch doing with these lights around him?
Exactly. And I've heard that same type of story many times, not only in Pennsylvania, from many other states and other countries as well over the years, and I know that there are Bigfoot researchers out there who've talked to me privately and have told me, we've seen strange spheres of light in association with Bigfoot activity in some areas, but they won't talk about it to their colleagues because they're afraid of being ridiculed. How I got involved in this aspect, you know, like I said, I got involved in this many, many years ago, and I was interested in Bigfoot way back in the early days, 1959, the 60s. I started hearing about alleged Bigfoot activity when I was in high school. So I graduated in 67, and I remember some of the kids were coming into school and telling me about how they were taking their dates out to this one particular area out in Derry Township that has a long history, you know, Bigfoot activity. And they were telling me they would be out with their dates parking, and they would see this, like a gorilla coming out of the woods throwing rocks at their car. And years later, that would be an area where there was a lot of history about Bigfoot activity along the Chestnut Ridge. But I of course, had known that there was a history from the Native Americans and from even newspaper accounts from the 1890s go back and talk about these hairy creatures seen in Pennsylvania. The earliest first-hand account I have on record goes back to 1931, near Indian Head, up again in Fayette County, which I mentioned is a very active area for these things along the Chestnut Ridge. But what was most significant, and this is what my recent book, Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook, focuses on, because I wrote this book because I felt it was very important to get this information out. And even though I had initially wrote a little bit about it back in the early 70s and about some of the strange things that had surfaced during investigation, I felt that there was a lot more to the story I'd never revealed, and I felt it was so important to bring this out because of some of the strange events of that time period. And anyhow, what I'm talking about is 1973, there's this massive wave of UFO sightings throughout the country in the fall of that year. It was making national headlines for weeks. But here in Pennsylvania, it started the first day of the year, continued all year long. We had hundreds and hundreds of UFO cases. We were investigating, and luckily, my first research group, the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group, was already established. We had investigators. We had teams of people who were trained to do this. And we were set up like at the clearinghouse. So reports were coming in as these reports were unfolding from across the state. And luckily, we were getting many reports coming in from the police departments and the news media. So we were being we were very, very active investigating the events as they were unfolding at that time. And so he had all this UFO activity going on, and a lot of these were, again, very detailed, very close-range reports. They weren't just lights in the sky. But in the summer, things got extremely much more fascinating and interesting. We had this massive outbreak of Bigfoot activity that started in the summer of 1973, continued into 1974. And it wasn't just one little community. I mean, it started out here in Westmoreland County, about 30 miles east of Pittsburgh. But reports were coming in from all over southwestern Pennsylvania and other parts of the state. And it was just incredible. I mean, multiple reports, sometimes numerous reports in one day from widespread areas. Many were daylight reports. Some cases involved multiple creatures, many times multiple eyewitnesses. In many of the events, we would get our teams out there, or myself, and there would be various types of physical evidence at the scene. For example, we made casting of footprints, saw other evidence that something was going on. Probably the best evidence that we saw, even some police officers responded to some of the cases back then, was how the animals reacted when these creatures were nearby. And while it was something you would see in various types of domestic and farm animals, dogs very prominently showed their reaction when these creatures were close by.
And how did they react?
Well, when the Bigfoot was in the distance, they would bark and go crazy. But when they got nearby, the most vicious dogs were paralyzed in fear.
Mm.
They wouldn't bark. They wouldn't move. They would shake. They would cower. They would hide.
Stan, let me ask you this. Is there any interaction that, because I've heard this before, any interaction with horses?
Yes. There were cases of horses and cattle, cats in the house, even young babies.
But as far as horses that were ridden, have you heard of that before?
Say that again. I didn't hear that.
Horses that were ridden by Sasquatch.
I've heard those reports. I've never had anything like that here that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Part of Lisa's investigation on her own land where she lives out there in the middle of nowhere, her horses have had their hair braided, and there's nobody out there. And they've
I've heard those stories, yes.
They've been like all sweaty in the morning when she goes out to see them on a cool day, like somebody's been riding them. And I've heard other reports of people say that they will do that. I mean, it just seems really crazy, doesn't it?
It's not a common factor that I've heard over the years, I can tell you that. It's something I've never had in Pennsylvania that I'm aware of.
Hmm.
Okay, but I will tell you, you know, as these reports are unfolding, and again, initially, I'm getting involved in this, my investigators were open-minded to the possibility that we're dealing with some type of unknown primate, which has always been the thought for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as these weeks and months are unfolding, these reports are coming in, we began to get some very unusual reports from the public. And a lot of these people are calling the police departments first. They're not out looking for any publicity. Probably 99% of the people we dealt with, even today from that time period, wanted no publicity and don't want any publicity. And they had nothing to gain from reporting, but many of these people were very frightened.
Right.
Many of these events were life-changing experiences for those involved, because most people would never have believed these things could occur until they had their own encounters.
Now, you told me prior to the interview that you've investigated or maybe talked to some people that have actually seen Bigfoot in a ship. Have you talked to people like
okay.
that?
Well, here's what was going on. As we're unfolding these cases now, these reports began, and then we began to get reports which began to suggest to us that there was a lot more to the UFO and Bigfoot phenomena. One of the first reports we got was here in Westmoreland County from the wife of a prominent doctor, and she had reported seeing this large boomerang-shaped object hovering over the area that one particular evening, and a few hours later, right down the street, she was hearing gunshots. And she found out later that her neighbor went outside to see what was going on with her dog. The dog was very, very upset to see this large, hairy creature going after the dog, and he started shooting at this thing as it ran off into the woods. Another report came in September up in north of Pittsburgh, almost the Ohio line, where two women were waiting for a friend to pick them up out in a rural area. They see this large, hairy creature covered with white hair, which is not that common, running across the road into the woods, but in one of its hand, it has a small, glowing sphere of light. So they ran in and told the dad of one of the girls who owned the property. He went down in the woods, and a short time later, this object comes across the scrime and projects a beam of light down into the woods where the creature had run into. And then we had a case which was probably today is probably still one of the classic cases. It's very involved. It's very, very strange. I detailed the whole report in my book, Solid Invasion. But just give you a quick scenario. October 25th, 1973. There had been a lot of UFO reports coming in that day from different areas of the state. But at 10:30 that night, I got a call from a state trooper from the Uniontown Barracks up in Fayette County, who just came back from investigating this incident. One of the key witnesses was with him at the barracks, and I talked to both of them at the time. The trooper said, "I think there's a chance something's still up in the pasture." He said, "I think you need to get a team up here right away." So it was late, but we got our team together, we got our equipment checked out, and we found our way up in that area and got there in the early morning hours. But what we found out about 9 o'clock that night, about 15 people in that area, that rural community, they observed this object about as big as a barn, bright red, spherical object about 100 feet off the ground, slowly moving downwards. Now, this happened on a farm, and again, the farmer's son and his wife were visiting his dad. It was his dad's farm. They were coming down the farm lane when they see this object, and the fella goes over to a neighbor's house. They get a different view of it, and they watch this thing coming down, so he and two of the neighbor boys decide to go up to investigate. They stopped over at his dad's farm first, grabbed the .30-06 rifle, and grabbed a handful of ammunition, which among that ammunition was a couple tracers. And as they proceeded towards the area in the distance, they were hearing like baby whining, crying sounds. They were hearing a high-pitched sound. Dogs in the distance were going crazy. And as they got up on top of the pasture, they were all stunned, all three of them, to see this object about 250 feet away, apparently right on the ground or right above it. But now it looks like a bright white dome. It's about 100 feet in diameter. It's making this high-pitched sound. It's illuminating the whole area. And they're just, they can't believe what they're seeing. And they watch this thing. And as they're watching, their attention soon turns to a fence line about 75 feet away, a barbed wire fence line. And they notice these two figures walking slowly along the fence line towards them. And their first thought is, well, they must be bear. And they realize, well, these things are huge. I mean, they're bipedal. They're walking upright. One's about 8 feet tall. The other's about 7 feet tall. They're covered with long, dark, matted hair. The arms are hanging down past the knees almost to the ground. They have glowing green eyes. There's kind of a funny stench in the air like burning rubber. And these things, the biggest creature's moving first. The smaller one's falling behind it, moving right along the fence line. And they just can't believe what they're seeing. And the one boy is very, very upset, and he finally runs out of the field. And the other fellow is yelling and saying, the other fellow, shoot him, shoot him. So he finally fires a tracer. So you just had that instant flash of light.
Mm-hmm.
He fires the second tracer, and when he does, the largest of the two creatures makes a whining, crying sound, reaches out to grab that tracer. And the exact time that it does that, that object in the field suddenly vanishes and disappears.
Hmm.
It doesn't take off. There's no sound. There's no illumination. It's just gone.
So
the creatures turn around and start slowly walking back along the fence line back towards the woods. So the guy starts shooting live ammo right into him. He's been hunting for years. He said he remembers how even like the biggest creature turned around was just staring at him with his green eyes. And he said, I know I hit that thing, but it was no indication that either one were hurt or slowed down in any way. And he fired at them, they ran out of there, went back to the farmhouse, got the family, took them to a neighbor's, called the state police. So the trooper arrives about 45 minutes later, and they go up to the field, they go up in the troop car, and what the trooper indicated was the area where the object had been on the ground, or right above it, was now self-luminescent glowing, about 100 to 150 feet in diameter. He said it was bright enough that if he had a newspaper, he could have sat down within that area and read the newspaper from the light coming off it. The animals wouldn't go anywhere near it. And the story goes deeper and deeper and gets stranger and stranger, and it's just an amazing case. We got up there. By the time we got up there early morning, the animals still would not go in the area. The glowing area was gone. Radiation levels were normal. And it was the beginning of a major investigation, which went on for quite a while.
You know what you're telling me, Stan, because I am a believer of these things. I know too many people personally that I consider reliable sources that have seen these. And the part about where he reached out and grabbed the tracer, or that they were not hurt, you know, really, really hits me, because it's like they know how to avoid us, it seems like. People always say, how come you don't capture them? Because they know how to avoid us, and they've got some abilities maybe we're not aware of.
So I'm going to take him now a step further, because after all the hundreds of Bigfoot cases I've investigated in Pennsylvania since that time, I mean, as recent as the last few weeks, okay, reports come in year after year over many different areas of the state, and I have to ask myself, after so many reports, not just in Pennsylvania, but around the country and around the world of something similar, after all these years, and like the skeptics ask, why don't we have more physical evidence? Why hasn't a body shown up? I mean, not that I recommend shooting at them, even though I had many cases where people did. Nobody ever brought one down. Why has somebody hit one with a car, found some bones out there? It just doesn't make any sense after all these years if we're dealing with some type of normal flesh and blood animal. But then we had a case, one of other cases that I mentioned in my writing, about an event that happened February 6, 1974, which was a case that gave us the clue as to why we may not have any bodies. And if you want, I'll be glad to tell you about that story.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So February 6, 1974, again, Fayette County, up along the Chestnut Ridge, mountainous area, not far from Ohio Pile. The state police, well, let me tell you a little bit about that time period, because those listening, some will remember, during that time, there was gas rationing going on. There was a national trucker strike.
I remember that.
Shootings on the roadway. So here in Pennsylvania, the state police and the National Guard were patrolling together. So both state police and National Guards responded to this incident. I couldn't get gas the next morning, so we couldn't get up there until early the next morning. But anyhow, the report was, here's this woman who lived out in the mountains all her life, has a little cabin out there, new animals, well, pretty much not afraid of anything. She was sitting in her home that evening. Everything was normal. And she, out on her porch, she had a little bit of garbage out there. It's like tin cans or whatever on a pile. And something was in the tin cans making noise, rolling them around. So previous to that, there had been a pack of wild dogs coming through. Figured the dogs were back in the area. Decided she was going to grab her gun and shoot over their head and to scare the dogs away. So she grabs her shotgun and loads one chamber. She walks over to the door and switches on the light for the porch. She opens up the door and steps out. And right in front of her, a few feet away, is this huge hairy creature, not any dogs. She told me, and I always remember this, because she never ever, during the whole time we talked to her, never called it a Bigfoot. She said it looked like a great big hairy ape. It had its arms straight up over its head. And what does she do? She shoots right into it. She said there's this bright flash of light, like a strobe from a camera. She said at that exact moment, that creature just disappeared and vanished right in front of her eyes.
Really?
Now, the gunshots heard by her in-laws that lived 100 feet away, they heard the shot. They called her on the phone, asked her what happened. She told them. The son-in-law grabs a pistol. He begins to move towards her cabin home, and he said that he was surrounded by several hairy people with eyes like coals of fire. And he began to shoot randomly at him as he ran into the home. At the same time, there's this glowing object hovering over the nearby woods and trees. He saw like a big Christmas ornament with different lights on it. So they call the state police. And by the time the police and the National Guardsmen get there, whatever was there was gone. But I talked to the chief investigating officer, and what he said was, I don't know what happened out there. Something very, very strange occurred, based on how all the animals were reacting, especially the dogs. And these people had a number of dogs there, and I think one was the Eskimo Spitz, I think it was a bird dog, but he told me how he physically opened the cage and tried to force one of those dogs out. Now, those dogs should have been barking, carrying on. They didn't make a sound. He tried to pull one of these dogs out, and that dog should have ripped his arm off, and the dog wouldn't even respond. Next morning when we got there, everything was back to normal. While we're out in the woods investigating, we find in the tree out there, right in line where the woman shot, we found that pattern of a BB pattern in the tree out there, right in line where she shot at that thing. So
there's no way that could go through there.
I'm sorry?
There's no way that could go through a, you know, if you were shot with buckshot, that's not going to pass through you.
Well, anyhow, it was a very, we spent a lot of time up there. There was a lot of other strange happenings that we had found out had been going on that property for a short time. And after that event, things apparently just stopped. But that was one of other cases that I mentioned that seemed to suggest that we were dealing with something that had a bit of physical and a non-physical component to it. Which
may
well
that,
be the reason why we don't have any bodies.
Do you believe that in multidimensional is the possibility of multidimensional beings that could kind of come and go from here?
And more, a lot of the cases I've looked at over the years with various type of strange creatures, from large flying creatures to the Bigfoot reports, other type of strange creatures, to some of the UFO cases. I mean, we have UFO cases where they suddenly appear and disappear.
Right.
And we're not talking high altitude. We're talking very close range.
You know,
where they suddenly change form from one form into another. That we're dealing with something here that we just don't have the answers for.
You know, I don't know if you got into this when you talked to David Twitchell, but when he was young, in 1962, his whole family saw a UFO just appear. He said, like the sky opened. And this was down in Detroit area, and they all witnessed this thing just showing up in the sky. And
I don't think we mentioned that.
Yeah, it's quite a story that he's got, because later on, his sisters had memories of being taken.
Interesting.
Yeah. David, so that's what got David involved. I mean, everybody's got a reason. When I was a young kid, I saw a UFO in the sky. I thought it was a UFO. Well, it was, because I didn't know what it was, right?
Well, one thing I do want to stress is that these type of reports with UFOs and Bigfoot, they're a much smaller percentage overall than reports we have. I mean, generally, UFO cases have no connection with Bigfoot.
Right.
And most Bigfoot reports have no connection with UFOs. However, such cases do exist.
Somehow they're connected.
And I can tell you, since the late 1970s, I've been in touch with various investigators from around the country and around the world who told me that they had such cases on record, but they were afraid to publish it for fear of being laughed at by their peers.
Right.
And as you look at the Internet, in more recent years, you're seeing more and more people in both fields.
Let me ask you this, Stan.
More open-minded to these possibilities.
Let me ask you this. If we're seeing all these things, and there's more experience with these things, and we have camera phones that do video and pictures, how come we don't have any solid pictures or videos of these things?
Well, on occasion, these things do show up. And I mean, I have cases where, especially with UFOs, I got one really good case local here where people got an extremely good photograph of a UFO with their cell phone camera. And there have been other reports of allegedly other type of creatures being photographed on game cams, for example. But they do exist. A lot of people say, even I know cases in the last couple of years that I've seen pictures with people who have them. They don't even want to put them out there publicly because they don't want to involved in the cases. Okay? And I can tell you, in many other events, it's the emotional reaction of why people don't take photographs. Because I've had many cases of people who have encountered these things, and they were so stunned and so mystified and so shocked that they didn't even think about afterwards to grab their cell phone and take a picture.
Moving on to, before we run out of time here, a couple of years ago, I was, I think I went kayaking. We go up to my father-in-law's camp. And the family kind of spends time up there, and they got a nice little lake, but it's a real remote area. And on the way back, we're traveling down a dirt road, and that leads back to the camp. And off the side of it is a two-rut road, and those roads just go on forever, it seems like. And I'm looking down the road, and it's just about dark, and I see this bird with a wingspan and it's just flying down this two-rut road. And it covered the road easily, and I'm thinking, well, maybe it's an owl. I don't know what else it could be up here, what we would have. But then I started reading about these thunderbirds, and I read about some stuff online. I think it was in Indiana. There's a fairly well-documented case that a child actually got picked up. Now, what do you know about these reports of the thunderbirds?
I've investigated quite a number of such cases. Actually, Pennsylvania has a long history, especially up in the northern part of the state, up in the Black Forest region, where there's a long, long history of people seeing these giant birds with these huge wingspans. But I have reports from throughout the state, and interestingly, right here, just miles from my house, in a fairly populated area, there have been several different reports over the years of these giant birds being seen. I mean, one of the first cases I had was back, I believe it was about 2001, in South Greensburg. A fellow's walking along, and he hears the sound in the sky that he said the best way to describe it, he said, was like wings, like flags flapping in a thunderstorm. And that's what caused him to look up into the sky and see this thing. Here's this huge bird with his giant wingspan flying right above the truck traffic, the trucks and the cars along Route 119 in South Greensburg, a fairly populated area. And it turns and flies down the road and lands in this big tree. And he said as he watched this thing coming off the tree, he said it was amazing how these huge branches were bending from the weight of this thing. And so that was very interesting. That was in 2001.
How big a wingspan? Did he tell you, Stan?
A couple of years ago.
Stan, did he tell you how big the wingspan would be?
What's that?
Did he tell you how big the wingspan would be?
I believe he estimated it was probably between 10 and 15 feet.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. But I've had other incidents, and I should tell you about it just about a year or so ago, just about maybe a quarter mile down the road. Several people were out barbecuing behind their home, heard this swooshing sound, looked up, and 40 feet above them, there's this gigantic bird with its beak looking down at them. It was a huge wingspan flying right down the road, very close where the other one happened. And there have been interesting cases. I've had some recent reports, and I can tell you, I'm not ready to release the information. I'm working on a case that's happened in the last few weeks. It's an incredible, detailed, close encounter with a big flying something. And I hope to have that sketch and that report out hopefully very soon on my website and on the Internet.
Have you heard of...
It's a very interesting case, and that's up in Fayette County also.
Have you heard of any kind of incidents where people have been attacked or taken or anything like that?
I cannot say that. No, I've heard alleged reports out of state over the years, not very common, but no, I can't say that I have any cases I've investigated personally that I can think of.
So there's a lot of reports about these giant, huge birds in your area.
Yeah. In my first book called Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, I go into the Thunderbirds and a lot of other very close encounters with strange creatures. And there was one case that happened in neighboring West Virginia. And this happened in the fall of 2007. And this was probably one of the most interesting Thunderbird reports I had heard. This was outside of Clendenin, West Virginia. And this was the early morning hours when this gentleman was riding down the roadway. And he had to hit his brakes very quickly because the road is being blocked by this gigantic bird that's in the middle of the road eating some type of roadkill. And the guy, of course, stopped looking at this thing, and the creature's looking at him. And he said this thing had to be at least 4 feet tall because the top of its head extended above the roofline of his car. And he gave a very, very detailed description. It had dark brown or black feathers. Went into a great amount of detail, but he said what was just most impressive was the fact that the wingspan took up both sides of the two-lane road. Mm-hmm. And he actually went back the next day to the site, and he measured it, and it was, I believe, 21 feet across.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. But he said what was so incredible, he said this thing was trying to get off the ground, and it was huge, and it was moving very, very awkwardly, and it kept jumping from one foot to the other, hopping, and when it was flapping its wings, gaining speed, he said it was actually stirring up dust and gravel on both sides of the road as it became airborne.
Wow.
And he went back later, as I said, and he went back and he measured that, and I believe it was 21 feet across that he said it, what it was. And he went to the library and tried to find a similar bird, and he said the closest thing he could find was, I believe it was a teratorn, a prehistoric bird that was supposed to be extinct so many years ago.
Yeah, I've heard reports that the wingspan on a lot of these creatures are 15 to 20 feet across.
Right.
And the one I saw, see, I don't think it was a Thunderbird. I just saw this incredibly big bird. I don't know what it was. I mean, what would be, is there a bird that would have maybe a 10-foot wingspan?
Well,
I don't know about
I mean, you have a condor. But
not up here.
Not common to this area.
No. So I thought, well, maybe it's just this really huge owl. And the body, you know, I was seeing it flying away from me. The body was wide and thick.
Uh-huh.
And so I could see just the back end of it. you know, and the huge wingspan. But it was kind of cool. I thought it was cool. Whenever I have those kind of things, they're neat. StanGordon.info is your website. StanGordon.info. I'll put a posting, a listing, a link on our site. Now, the name of your book, one of your books, is Silent Invasion, correct?
Yeah, the most recent book is called Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO and Bigfoot Casebook, which is a very detailed account of the strange events of the 1973 and 74, and I can assure readers that some of the most mysterious cases they'll ever read about occurred and were documented in the book. My other book, the first book, is called Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, which both are available on my website, and that details a lot of extremely close-range encounters with UFOs and various types of strange creatures.
Awesome. And I really enjoyed talking to you, Stan. You have so much information. Obviously, you've been doing this a long time, and I like the fact that you do take an open-minded but skeptic approach, and I think that's the healthiest way to do it. Sometimes people are too much one way or the other, and maybe you don't get a true representation. So I look forward to perhaps we can do this again down the road. You're working on more things. I'm sure we could talk for a long time, right?
That sounds great, and I'll be glad to come back on again.
Thank you very much, Stan Gordon, out of what town in Pennsylvania?
I'm in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, the county seat of West Warren County, about 30 miles east of Pittsburgh.
Well, you're quite a ways from where we're at. You know where Upper Michigan? Have you ever been here?
Yeah, I've been up to Detroit, but it's been a while.
So you haven't been north, the great north area.
Maybe many, many years ago.
It's it's beautiful up here because we're surrounded by the Great Lakes, and there's a lot of trees and rivers and lakes and strange things that go on here as well. But Stan Gordon from Pennsylvania, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.